I've always felt that my basic competition was me and my ability to execute and to do. If I could do the things that I wanted to do, which was challenging enough, I'd be okay. The basic other belief, and it gets really much to like the Go-Giver book, which is basically your net worth ends up being like the value that you put out into the world. There's basic laws of you get what you give, essentially. So the more I found that I could add values to the lives and practices of others, it just came back to me in spades. So I think for me, it's like an abundance mindset.
Welcome to Trial Lawyer View, the podcast dedicated to the fierce yet compassionate lawyers who fight every day for justice in the courtroom. Our guests are top trial lawyers and their firms who share their stories and experiences, offering valuable insights into their journey, as well as expert guests who provide actionable strategies and practical tips for personal injury lawyers looking to optimize their operations, enhance client service, and drive growth in their practices. Trial Lawyer View is brought to you by Synergy. At Synergy, we aren't just a service provider. We are a strategic partner for personal injury law firms, seamlessly integrating with law firms to boost efficiency from day one. Outsourcing cumbersome administrative tasks like lien resolution and Medicare compliance to an expert partner like Synergy enables personal injury firms to focus on what they do best.
Welcome to the Trial Lawyer View podcast. Today, we're lucky to have Ryan McKean join Trial Lawyer View. He's a seasoned trial lawyer and the co-founder of Best Era LLC, bringing over 18 years of extensive experience in trial and litigation to the legal community. As the former CEO of Connecticut Trial Firm, Ryan achieved remarkable success, including a landmark $100 million jury verdict, and helped position the firm as a leader in the personal injury field. His commitment to excellence has earned the firm numerous accolades, including recognition in the Multi-Million Dollar Advocates Forum and as one of the fastest growing firms in the U.S., according to Law Firm 500. Ryan's passion for enriching the legal profession is evident in his contribution as a co-author of the best-selling book, Tiger Tactics, Powerful Strategies for Winning Law Firms, where he shares his valuable insights and innovative strategies for success. Ryan is dedicated to raising up others in the legal field and regularly speaks at national legal conferences on a range of topics, including innovative marketing, executive management, and the law's future. He is also an adjunct professor at the University of Connecticut School of Law, where he imparts his knowledge to the next generation of legal professionals. Today, we get the opportunity to have him share his knowledge with the Trial Lawyer View audience on a range of topics, including how he built a personal injury firm from 5 people to 40 in 5 years while tripling revenue. Ryan, welcome to Trial Lawyer View, and thank you for joining me today on the podcast. I know you're a little bit under the weather, so appreciate you being here with me.
Jason, thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to our time together.
So I wanted to start out asking you a few questions about your law firm, because I think for our listeners, it will be of interest in terms of your journey and how you built that. So in 2019, you formed Connecticut Trial Firm. From my research, you started out with 5 people and grew it to over 40 in a little over 5 years while tripling revenue. What were the 5 key strategy you used to scale the firm in that kind of growth mode? I know, I think I've heard you mention EOS, so I'm not sure if you started out using that and how those sorts of tools were used in order to help you grow in that kind of a scaling situation.
So growth to me is a choice. The size of your firm is largely a choice. And we had made the decision early on that we wanted to grow the firm. Like we wanted it to be bigger than us. And so really we actually started with 2 people and then we went to 5 and then onward. But I really think that it started with it being a choice. So we did EOS, we did our vision, and we knew that our aspirations were big. Our aspirations were to be the best trial firm in Connecticut. And you can't get there by playing small. So we needed to build marketing systems, operational systems, financial systems, leadership systems necessary to support the growth of achieving that vision. So I would really say that it started with us being intentional about who it is that we wanted to be.
So when you went about that process of looking at the business and what you wanted it to be, was it as simple as writing it down? You know, I know as far as EOS is concerned, there's, you know, that process of doing your VTO and visioning. Was it as simple as that for you guys to chart it out, or was it a lot more complex ultimately?
It was both that simple and that complicated. In what I mean by that is, you know, we sat down at a bar, at a bar stool, and we said, well, who do we want to be, right? We want to be the best trial firm in Connecticut. And we had our VTO in front of us, and our VTO doesn't let you do that. So it forces all these horrible, non-amorphous goals, or opaque goals. It's always very smart, right? Like you need it, very clearly designed, measurable. You need to set time limits on it. So we said, look, in 10 years, we want to have a $10 million jury verdict, because we looked at our the firms that we wanted to be, firms like Koskoff and Beter in Connecticut, or firms like the Flood Firm. And we said, you know, well, what do they really do that distinguishes them? And we're like, well, if we get a $10 million jury verdict, like that distinguishes us. Like the highest in Connecticut at this point is probably like a $14 or $15 million jury verdict. So 10 is like, that's legit, right? And, you know, we didn't have a case that was probably worth $100,000 at the time. So what we had to do, we had to say, but we said, look, this is what we want to do. And so we knew that we needed to be tech forward. That was one of our values. So we did that in March, and by May, we signed up with Filevine at the time, because we were like, this software could support our aspirations. By September, we ended up meeting a man named Mikey Cruz. Mikey was a client who got paralyzed as a result of corporate negligence, and we ended up getting a $100 million verdict on Mikey's case in 5 years, but we set out to do the 10, and it had to be a jury verdict. So when we got Mikey in, it was like, well, we need to do right by him. So we had to figure out the financials. We had to figure out the operational supports. We had to go out and we had to hire people. We had to basically reverse engineer getting that verdict. So it really did start with the vision, because had we not had that, we may have very easily referred that case out.
That brings me to the next question I was going to ask about, which is processes, educational systems, and the culture that you built at the firm, which helped you grow and eventually helped you ultimately get that kind of $100 million verdict. Why are those things so darn important if you want to get to that kind of end result?
Because you have to make space for the important. And in a law firm, everything is going to eat in the way of doing the important. And, you know, I'm going to say this and people are going to they're going to listen in their cars or they're listening on their walks and they're going to laugh because they're going to understand it, right? You've got this major wrongful death case or this major trucking case or, you know, the work that you really want to be doing, the person you want to be helping. And then your printer goes offline. And then your secretary can't figure out how to get stamps. Then your paralegal who knew how to do things leaves. They move to Iowa or something. All of these things that get in the way of you doing the work. So one of the things that I realized early on is I had a part-time employee for the summer, and I needed some letter mailed. I was just away on vacation. I needed a letter mailed, and I get a call. It's like 2 p.m. Ryan, how do I get stamps? I've been waiting. I've been trying to figure out all day how to get stamps. And I was like, oh my gosh, these are like the most expensive stamps ever, because I had just been paying somebody 5 hours to try to figure out how to get stamps. And then I realized that this was my problem and not theirs. So what I did was I started doing an internal wiki. We use software called Tetra, and where we would write down, here's how you print a stamp. Here's how you do this. You know, here's the stamps.com login. Here's where you can find the stickers. They're in the top drawer of the first filing cabinet on the reception desk, right? So we started doing those things, and that allowed us to add people and put them in positions to succeed. So really documenting and building systems was so critical. And independent of what we had built out in FileVine and independent of what we had built out in LeadDocket and other places, you know, our internal wiki by the time I left in May was 800 and some odd pages.
So you're going from tribal knowledge to documenting everything internally so that your team had a place to go, oh, that's how we do things here at the firm.
Correct. And it was because we recognized that you're trying to try a case, right? And it's the cable that you can't find that is the thing that's causing you aggravation as you're off the court. It is all these sort of little things. So if we could take care of those things and we can organize ourselves and systematize them and delegate that activity to others, it would free us up to do the focus groups that we needed to write the opening statement, to interview the witnesses that we needed to interview. Otherwise we just wouldn't have enough time to do those things.
What about the culture of the firm? How did you build that alongside of the actual nuts and bolts of operating the firm?
Culture to me is what you do. It's what a firm does. It's action. It's time on a calendar. It's not some obscure concept or anything. It's very tangible. And so what we did culturally is we said early on, if it's not in Tetra, it doesn't exist. If it's not in Tetra, you know, you can ask the question, but the first thing we're going to ask is, did you check Tetra? Did you check our wiki? And then if you get the answer, because it's not there, what you need to do is go off and you need to make the page and add it. So that's how we built those 800 and some odd pages over time. So it was a belief that we were all working simultaneously on two things, one of which is doing the thing in front of us. And the second of which is making it easier for us to do it the next 500 times we do it.
So that sounds like a very intentional culture of continuous improvement and everybody committing to helping each other out by building that knowledge base.
Correct. And they benefited from it because it saved them a lot of time. And we would get data on this stuff and it would be, you know, we would get 1,400 views of this website a month. Internally. So that's a lot of questions that people are having and a lot of contributions that they're making.
So I wanted to ask you about being a law firm CEO and what that was like when you're scaling and growing a firm like you did. So what management practices did you implement to ensure that your team operated efficiently and was a high morale, high energy team?
I really didn't step into, I would say, the CEO role fully, probably until about a year ago when I was completely out of cases, completely out of client interaction. So it was an intentional transition over time. And so, I mean, basically, look, if you're starting out as you're growing, it's really about, you know, defining your values, which is another EOS principle. Living those values, doing those things, hiring and firing based upon those values and alignment with them. So that becomes sort of, as a threshold matter, very, very important. But as you grow up in the firm, you hit sort of different pain points. And I would say, you know, about 25 people, that's a pain point because you've got to start putting in middle management about that phase, right? You can't all work together. You can't all manage things. It becomes too complicated. So you need your director of finance, your director of marketing, your director of operations. You need to start filling those positions to allow you to scale beyond that. So we did. And then we brought on a full bucket COO, who could help us. And we had data to track those things. We did EOS where we did leadership meetings. We hired an EOS implementer. We hired actually Fireproof, who I know you just had Mike Morris on in a previous episode. We worked with Kate Nikazel and John Nikazel on running our weekly leadership meetings. And those things were ultimately the things that allowed us to keep scaling.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you about that later on, but I'll ask you now because I think it's an important question for law firms that are looking to scale and grow. And that is how important it is to eventually have a CEO and or a CEO who's focusing every day on the business side of the law firm. Because the question in my mind is, does it limit your growth if you don't make those hires eventually? And I think what you were saying through the lens of what you guys had done was that, you know, ultimately someone needs to be focused on that when you get to a certain point.
Yeah, I think, look, there's a lot of ways to do this, but I do think that the EOS model of a CEO or COO, and they call it visionary integrator, but same sort of concept, becomes tremendously important if you are looking to sort of scale beyond 35 people, 30, you know, if you're looking to sort of scale beyond that, I think it becomes critical. The problem is it becomes hard to allocate the money for those two positions until you're, you know, $8, $10 million in gross revenue a year that you're able to really afford and support those positions. Because you know, it's both a luxury and a huge advantage to have somebody in a full-time vision job where they are looking out at industry trends, they are trying to identify improvements, and also on a notch below that, to have a number two who is really then focused on prioritizing and implementing the changes that need to be constantly made. So, you know, look, it's no surprise to me that somebody like Mike Morris and John Nakazel, who are, you know, very different people, have immense success exactly because they're in the best roles for them.
So knowing that there's different stages of a law firm, so if a law firm's in an earlier stage, does that mean that you have to do it all, or do you start looking at hiring maybe not a COO or a CEO, but someone that's in a administrative role that can help with some of those things? Because, you know, I think the perception is that, you know, until you get to a certain point, you don't really need that. But it seems like it's more of a progression, at least, you know, in business, that's been my experience. You know, when you're starting out, you've certainly got less in terms of your management structure, but then you start building out some middle management and you go from there as you continue to grow in business.
Yeah. So our belief, and we implemented it, and as we do consulting, it's also our belief that when your firm hits, like, there's different thresholds, and the best way I can explain it is that look, when I talked about the initial vision, that was just me and my partner, and we're at a bar stool, right? As you grow, you get a booth. And then it becomes a long table. And when you're at a long table, you can't talk to everybody at the other end of the table. And then it becomes, you need to rent a room, and then it becomes, you need to rent a restaurant. So it all becomes more complicated. So what I'm really going to focus on here is you're at the booth, right? And then that fifth hire. Okay, so it'd be most booths, it would be uncomfortable to have five people in. So it's that fifth hire that you should really make as a full-time admin person. To make sure that, you know, the printers work, and to maybe help do some light bookkeeping and manage the trash or whatever needs to be done. But it's really that fifth hire that you start needing admin support. And I can go into the basic reasons why. Or look, the U.S. military and other people have done studies. It's very hard to have teams that are bigger than six. And without especially a management structure in place. So you, at that point, need somebody. All the lines of communication break down because they're inefficient. Getting people on the same page is more problematic. So that fifth hire, I think as an admin is very important. And so firms that we see make that hire at 5, they can grow to 10, 15. Firms that don't, they pay a big price. They struggle in a lot of ways, 6, 7, 8, 9 people. And it just is inefficient.
I'm curious in terms of how you used the community and masterminds and other support systems that are available on personal injury law to help grow, and what was most helpful in supporting you while you were focused on growing a firm.
Yeah, I can't say enough things about John Fisher's mastermind. John absolutely changed my life and the trajectory of my firm, because you need to talk to other people who have done the thing that you want to do. It's really like the ultimate hack in life. Find somebody who's done the thing and ask them how they did it. Talk to them, and it can shortcut a lot of headache, and it can make you a lot better. So, I learned things like from John Fisher's mastermind about using advocate capital to fund case expenses, or I learned from Craig Goldenfarb about a linear workflow and implementing that in a personal injury practice. And those are things that maybe eventually I would have figured out. But when you had somebody like Craig, who at the time had a firm of like 55, like he had been down this road, and it was just so useful to understand that. And then ultimately, as we grew beyond that, it became working with John Nakazel and Kate Nakazel at Fireproof to help us understand how to grow sort of even beyond that. To me, those kinds of investments in yourself and in your firm are the most profit revenue generating thing out there. Ignorance is very, very expensive.
Yeah, I've talked about that with other guests, this idea of using coaches and mentors and communities and masterminds. I know I've been part of that, and it's so powerful to have people that are either further down the line than you or people that are even behind you, just that collaboration in thinking about things maybe a little bit differently than you would if your head is buried in the details of what's going on right in front of you within your firm.
And it's just good to have friends, I think, in this business. People talk about law being lonely, and I've never found it that way because I have friends through these groups. I know you're down in Orlando. Do you know my Tiger Tactics co-author friend, Bill Umansky?
Yeah, actually, I was going to ask you about that next, because Bill's a great guy, and I've known him for forever. Was on his podcast. He's been on this podcast. Yeah, he's a very interesting guy.
I got to listen to the Umansky podcast with you, because I love Bill, and I've known him for probably close to a decade at this point. I'm going through some tough times this spring with really like the breakup of my firm. And, I remember I'm in Versailles, and I get a call from Bill Umansky, and normally I wouldn't pick up, but if Bill calls me, I will pick up. And Bill was like, "Brother, I love you. I want you to know I'm thinking about you and I'm here for you." And that kind of support, just means so much. So they're there to help, get you to where you want to be and, support you when it feels like things can be bleak.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so that leads me to the book that you co-authored, Tiger Tactics. And I wanted to ask about the key strategies from the book. That what you think are the top 5 takeaways from the book related to standout strategies that a law firm should prioritize to enhance their chances of succeeding?
Okay, so strategy number one to me is clearly defining your vision. And as I work with firms, or even in my own firm, I'd be like, well, this is really a vision question, right? We're struggling. It's manifesting itself in what software should we be choosing? But really the question is something larger, like who are we or where do we want to go? So clarity on vision is one, right? And once you have clarity on vision, and this doesn't get talked about a ton, but it's really dialing in your financial systems. like doing revenue projections, doing budgeting, understanding allocations, profit first, like all of these things become incredibly important, because if you're not managing your money, that creates all sorts of problems, right? I think then it's really about essentially selling your vision in two ways. So I'm going to go three and four. The first is selling it to your team. You've got to convince people to come work for you. You've got to convince people that you're the place that they want to spend their career. And the better, there's not many problems in business that can't be solved with hiring the right people. I strongly feel that way. Then it becomes also, when I say selling the vision, it becomes really marketing. Marketing is really the sale of your vision. So are you dialed in? Do you know who your ideal client is? Do you know who you are? What your values are? You know, what is your reputation, your brand? All of these sorts of things become, I think, very, very critically important. And the fifth thing that ties it all together is systems. It's creating systems on how to handle cases, systems on how your business runs. I mean, ultimately, marketing systems and financial systems as well. But it's those sorts of pillars to me, when they're aligned and you're having the people create the systems, run the systems that are in line with the vision, that are promoting your vision to others, like that's when you become a machine. That's when you do get traction.
Yeah. Great. Great advice. I mean, especially that focus on the financial side of things. I think that that's something that's overlooked oftentimes, that there's not enough focus on what truly is going on the financial side, looking at profitability, looking at how to leverage the most out of your team and make sure that they're focused on tasks that are moving cases forward for clients, and how does that continue to snowball to, you know, ultimately produce just great results for the people that you're representing. And so that's had other guests on recently talking about the importance of that, specifically measuring all of that, having a pulse on that, understanding it is so critical.
You know, and as we consult, like that's actually one of the questions that people have, which is that it's like, am I doing well? Like, like let's dig in. Let's see if you are in fact doing well. You know, and maybe they have books and they have data, but they don't look at it, or they don't understand it, or it's not organized in a way that's useful. Understanding some benchmarks as to like what spends should be done and how one should budget and what projections one can do becomes very important.
Yeah, and it's part of what we talk about with law firms in terms of our services is looking at how much lawyer time and paralegal time, for example, are spent on the phone with Medicare resolving conditional payments. And that's very much administrative work that ultimately can be outsourced to make the firm run more efficiently and more profitably by recapturing attorney and paralegal time. But oftentimes when we talk about those things, the firms don't often have a great handle on even looking at just what you talked about. Well, how am I doing? Well, that should be something you're able to determine by looking at your data.
100%. And so that's those things I become very important, because, you know, one of the things that can disorient you is that when I was solo, like I knew everything. I knew every case. I knew every client. They probably had my cell phone. I mean, it was very different practice. And as we grew, I didn't know my cases. I didn't know my clients. And even at some points it was like, oh, this person works here. Like it becomes a different system as you sort of elevate on a path to being a CEO. And I mean, I knew people worked here, but it's one of these things that you just don't know everything that goes on in the firm. And that's really where data and data visualization and understanding more complicated metrics becomes very important, because it allows you to know where to explore in your firm, what questions you should be asking, who you should be talking to, why this is what this is, because it's really at scale. It's the only way that you can do it.
So you talked about your firm and the breakup of it, and I know that you sold your interest in the firm and decided to start this consultancy. I'm assuming that came with a lot of self-introspection. I'm just curious, what made you decide that you wanted to go down this path and start Best Era?
I think for me in this, it was, look, I'm 44 and I've had some success in this game, and I have some money and I'm able to sort of figure out, like, I'm afforded a rare opportunity, which is to say, what is it that I really enjoy doing? And one of the things that I really, really enjoyed doing was talking with other law firm owners, helping them, sort of informally consulting on their business. I really enjoyed teaching, so I would do some guest lecturing at some law schools. And, you know, today I'm an adjunct professor at University of Connecticut School of Law. I just taught a legal entrepreneurship class this morning. And I love that work. Like, it's just what energizes me. So I'm like, well, why don't I go on what energizes me, as opposed to just saying I'm going to build a bigger and bigger and bigger PI firm. And in part, I had achieved, I think, maybe beyond even what I had set out to do in that realm. And it just became time for something that it's like, let's try this. Like, this seems like a lot of fun to me. And it seems like a place that I can have an impact on. So why not? But even when I consult with people, I tell my students, I'm like, look, you should, anything you decide to do, you should love doing, because you're going to be doing a lot of it. And I love this stuff.
From what I've gathered from doing research, I mean, essentially, you guys become an outsourced C-suite for law firms that don't have that kind of resource, or maybe just a support system to, even if they do have those resources, to help them scale and grow. We were talking about data a moment ago when we were talking about the financial side of things. I'm curious now, in this consultancy, how important data is in terms of analyzing what is going on and how you can help a particular law firm that you take on as a client.
So what we do, I mean, the way in which we see ourselves is really an educational company that does consulting, I think is maybe the best way. So we're working on building programs because we understand that, one of which is, like, our vision is to help 12,500 lawyers in the next 5 years. And so in order to do that, we can either be a team of like 100 people, or we can try to scale some of our knowledge. And so we're focused on developing books and products and checklists and modules. And we just hired one of our former paralegals to do paralegal personal injury training in the personal injury space, because that was a big problem for us. So we're having her build out some online classes. We're having her build out some materials that they can have. We're going to have her doing some group coaching and ultimately some one-on-one coaching with firms. So those are the kinds of different things that we do. But one of the things that we do get hired to do is really do sort of intensive with firms. Either we fly out, they fly to us. And we do 2 days of very intense dives into what is going on into their business. But in order to do that, before we get access to their books, we get access to their data and their case management, we get access to their marketing data. Like, we need to know these things before we can start helping, asking the questions and making the recommendations. So it's really a deep assessment from outside eyes as to what we think is happening in your business.
Assuming, because of your background and what you've built in terms of marketing and LinkedIn strategies, because you've built a massive following. I follow you and read the content that you put up, which is very timely and important for law firms. Curious how you guys help law firms leverage those kinds of strategies to build a powerful marketing machine for a law firm that's looking to grow, and what are just some of those key techniques that have proven particularly effective in your experience?
One of the things that I did, and one of the things why we started this, is one of the team members who went with me to Best Era was Brittany Green, and Brittany was our marketing director at the firm. And I worked very closely. As I grew up, my basic role in the firm became, to the extent I had one, was really working with marketing. So that was primarily the relationship. So when I was starting this, Brittany was like, let's do this, right? So Brittany comes aboard. And so one of the things that we do get asked is to do marketing assessments. And now we're not an SEO company. We're not a PPC company. We're not going to make videos for you. We're not going to do a whole bunch of things. One of the things that we're going to do is we're going to look at your current marketing, look at what works. We're going to look at your CRM. If you don't have a CRM, we're going to make some recommendations on getting them in. We're going to look at your budgeting. We're going to look at your average case value. We're going to look at a whole host of things. And we're also going to force you to define your vision. Like, what do you want to be? You're down in Orlando. Do you want to be the next Morgan & Morgan? Well, it's going to be a very different strategy if you want to do that than if you are like, you know what? I want 30 personal injury cases. I want them all to be worth more than $1 million. And that's all I want to handle in my firm. Okay. Like, there's no wrong choice there. But we're going to get clear on your vision. And then we're going to start developing. We're going to do a competitive analysis. We're going to look at what's going on in your market. We're going to try to identify some gaps that we think you could step into that align with your vision. Perhaps we're going to identify some vendors you may want to consult with. And then we're going to come up with a strategy that sort of works within your budget to help you grow the cases, whether it's help you build newsletters or help you with drip campaigns or help you with social or whatever the course of action is. But we're going to make some recommendations, and we approach it functionally as we would our firm, where we're like, what's the goal? Our goal is 600 cases. Like, how am I going to do that?
You had talked a little bit before about teaching now at UConn School of Law, and you teach the business side of law firms, talk about entrepreneurship. I'm curious if you could describe what you teach and how you are building education around that and how that may apply to Best Era and what you can develop for personal injury law firms to help support their growth.
So what I teach is all the things that took me immense amounts of time and money to learn over the course of my career, things that helped me move the needle with my firm. Like the opening chapter, like the opening class, they read E-Myth, and we explore E-Myth and Sarah the Pie Maker and the sort of challenges of entrepreneurialism. And then we go into classes on vision, and we go into we do marketing, we do finance, we do operations, systems, culture. We do all of these things. So we try to dive deeply as we can into different aspects of a law firm and how it relates to what I'm doing at Best Era. I've had a lot of interest in this class. So one of the things I'm going to do is develop it into an online class for lawyers to take at a very accessible price point, where I'm basically pulling some of the materials that I have created for UConn, putting it into a course, and it's going to be called, we have a book coming out next week, I think, or the week after, called The Way, and it's going to be called The Way Basecamp, and we're going to promote this as a product of for somebody who wants to learn the fundamentals for a firm that is maybe under $1 million in revenue, or for somebody looking to start out, like what can accelerate their growth. So I'm in the process of trying to record, organize those materials, and get to that to launch Q1 2025.
That's awesome. Well, we'll include a link to the book since it's launching with the show notes. And it's just really sorely needed, because I know when I was in law school, there was nothing like that. And I regretted not doing business as my undergraduate degree. I was a psychology major, because, you know, when I got into the business world, I really didn't know anything. And thankfully did a course and did some basically continuing education through Rollins College here in Orlando. And they had a mini MBA program, which I thought was great. That idea that you're talking about is helping lawyers understand the business aspects of running a firm, which is such an incredibly overlooked and missed fundamental part of the educational process, I think, of becoming a lawyer. It's great that you're doing that, and UConn is actually doing that.
Yeah, I am super excited to be able to do it. So grateful to Dean Ebony Nelson, who actually who makes me call her Ebony, found me. She followed me on LinkedIn, and she said, "Hey, why don't you come teach this class? It seems that law schools get criticized for not." Not doing this stuff. And she's like, would you want to come teach the class? And I'm like, I'd love to. This is one of these things where being able to step away brings me joy. I can tell you that being an adjunct professor does not pay as well as being a personal injury lawyer. So there's that. But I really and truly love that work.
So a couple of questions as we wrap up. In doing my background research for the podcast, I saw something that talked about some values that you hold dear: generosity, openness, and gratitude. And I'm curious, how do you use those in the context of the legal profession and now your consultancy, which is, the personal injury field is a cutthroat field. So I'm curious how that all jives with what is a very, very, very competitive area.
Here's the thing. I've always felt that my basic competition was me and my ability to execute and to do. If I could do the things that I wanted to do, which was challenging enough, I'd be okay. And the basic other belief, and it gets really much to the Go-Giver book, which is basically your net worth ends up being like the value that you put out into the world. Like, there's basic laws of you get what you give, essentially. So the more I found that I could add values to the lives and practices of others, like, it just came back to me in spades. So I think, for me, it's like an abundance mindset. And does that mean I'm going to sit down with people in Hartford and go over like what our marketing strategy is for the year? No, I'm not. I'm not going to go make things more expensive for myself. I'm not at all. I'm going to happily share things that I think can work about, because the truth is in this, like, it's the execution of the things that matter. I don't think that there are a ton of ideas that are like, oh my gosh, this is secret sauce. If somebody has a good marketing idea, it's probably on some podcast in 5 minutes or on stage somewhere. We live in cycles where information travels awfully quickly.
Yeah, I think that's very true. But I'm very grateful that you've taken the time to spend it with me today, sharing some of these things. And I wanted to ask you, because I always ask this of trial lawyers, and it's really an open-ended question, talk about whatever you want. What is your view, I guess, as a formal trial lawyer and now a consultant to trial lawyers?
Being a good trial lawyer starts with being a good listener, a good learner, being able to connect with others, and also being self-aware, doing that work on yourself or who you are. And, I've worked with some great trial lawyers, and, if I couldn't go into a courtroom and try to be Nick Rowley or Don Keenan, that's just not who I am. But it's like, who am I and how can I relate? So it's I think about knowing yourself, and I think it's also investing in yourself. My belief is that nobody comes out of the womb a great trial lawyer or a great business person. A lot of this can be taught and learned if you're willing to do it.
Oh, that's great advice. I mean, I've spent so many hours trying to know myself better and trying to be the best version of me, whether it's here leading or whether it's at home, as a parent and as a partner to my better half. It's, all those things are so important, and love that. Thanks for sharing that. So if anyone today is listening, wants to work with you, Ryan, is interested in getting in touch with you, what's the best way for our listeners to get in touch?
You can send me an email, ryan@bestera.io. go to my website, bestera.io, or just DM me on LinkedIn. That's a great place to find me. I will happily work with you. We do, consultations to figure out if we can work together at no charge. That's really about it. So I'd love to hear from you, whatever challenges you're facing, see if we can help you.
Well, thank you again, Ryan, for joining me, especially being under the weather. I feel for you having just had something like that a few weeks ago. It's rough, and hopefully you feel better soon, and we'll have, hopefully see everybody on the next episode of Trial Lawyer View.
Here is another episode of Trial Lawyer View. We hope you enjoy today's guest and discussion. Tune in to our next episode for more helpful insights from fellow trial lawyers and practice experts. This podcast is brought to you by Synergy. Visit partnerwithsynergy.com to learn more about how Synergy can free your firm to focus on what it does best.